Last night we explored the notion of the idea or the specific approach that Chazal took to the feeling, the purpose, the mood that's supposed to fill us between Pesach and Shavuot. And it's supposed to be a joyous time. And Sfirat HaOmer was understood to be the mechanism by which we seek to elevate ourselves. We understand the connection between Pesach and Shavuot. Pesach is the holiday on the 15th of Nisan, but Shavuot has no date in it. And obviously the reason that not have a date is to specifically connect the experience of Shavuot to the experience of Pesach. They're not independent. In fact, it's like one long period. And the period in between Pesach and Shavuot, the period we call Omer, is intended to be a period of elevation. And that's probably one of the reasons, based on what I suggested, was the explanation based on the Sefer HaChinuch, why the halacha is everybody counts. As the Mishnah Berurah points out, and the Shulchan Aruch points out, everybody says it. While the chazan, me, the rabbi, not every place the rabbi does, in some places, anybody's ever been to the boat shul for Myri, you know that whoever is davening, if it's the 15-year-old boy, he's the one who counts Sfira. It's irrelevant who's saying the bracha. The point is that everybody has to do their own counting. Why does everybody have to do their own counting? And last night I suggested because the whole purpose of the counting is to help you gain that sense of excitement and anticipation. But nobody can help that. You're the only one who can feel the excitement. I can't feel your excitement. I can't feel your anticipation. That's for you to do. And the counting is the tool. And so that's why everybody's supposed to count. But that's one approach. And I want to suggest to you another approach. And the approach, I think, emerges from an understanding about how the theme or the mood of the period of Omer changed historically. So while the Torah sees it as a period of excitement and anticipation, something happened historically to change that. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch points out that we, in fact, accept upon ourselves the notion of avelut, mourning. No haircuts, no shaving, no weddings, no simchas. You are allowed to say Shehecheyanu. That's a mistaken adoption. Some people think, well, just like during the 3 weeks, you can't say a Shehecheyanu. That's not the case, by the way, for the Sfira. You are allowed to buy new objects and say a Shehecheyanu. That is not the case. It is true that you shouldn't during the 3 weeks leading up to Tisha B'Av, but that's not the halacha, as the Mishnah Berurah points out, and almost all the poskim hold that. But let's go back and find out, so when did this period, when was there a change between the simcha that was intended and the mourning that we accepted? The earliest statement of this comes from the period of the Gaonim, so that we put this then in the 9th century. Somewhere in the 9th century, we have specific, explicit mention that we mourn during this period. Now, here you find a very interesting point. One of the Gaonim, Rav Natrunayan, in his collection of Tshuvot, says something very interesting. And he suggests this, that from the time of Rabbi Akiva's execution and the death of 12,000 pairs of his students, meaning 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, according to Rav Natrunai, from that point on, the period following Pesach transformed into a period of mourning. Now, he's the only one who actually says that. He's the only one who attaches it. The custom began as early as the period of the Mishnah, following the execution and the death. So we know what happened to Rabbi Akiva. He was brutally and savagely executed by the Romans. We tell the story twice during the year, once on Yom Kippur and once on Tisha B'Av. But the Gemara tells us in Masechet Yevamot that during this difficult time of the Roman occupation of Israel and their brutal rulership, that 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died. And it was a mysterious death. And here you find a fascinating disagreement in some of the rabbinic sources. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamot suggests they died of an illness which is often associated with inappropriate behavior, that in some ways they didn't behave properly. And then the Gemara labels it, lo na'agu kavod zevazeh, that they were not properly respectful one to the other. Can you imagine that? 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva failed to treat each other with the proper kavod, and they were killed by God. By God. Clearly a source of mourning. However, another one of the Gaonim, And also the Yerushalmi attribute their death to a different reason entirely. Completely different. What's the reason? Rav Haigalon says that they died because of Shmada. They were killed by the Romans. That they were involved in a rebellion. They were involved in the rebellion against Rome. Led by whom? Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba. So you have the Gemara Yavama saying, no, lo naguz kavod zevazeh. And then you have the Yerushalmi and you have Rav Haigalon saying, no, they actually died because of their participation in the revolt. So who's right? So let me suggest an interesting idea that I saw by Rabbi Kenneth Brander, who heads up the Or Torah Stone network of institutions started, founded by, as you know, Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. So he posits a very interesting idea. He says, actually, it's not exactly a stira. It's not a conflict. Let's go back to the historical reason. Yes, the Romans, of course, were in charge, and they exerted their authority. Bar Kokhba led a rebellion to push back against Rome. And you know, one of the things that he did, interestingly enough, to demonstrate his non-acceptance of Roman rule was he minted his own coins, which was considered, of course, to be an act of treason against Rome. So we've seen, archaeologists have recovered these coins. So one of the coins, on one side, you see a depiction of the Beit HaMikdash, which is obviously the purpose of the rebellion, to reclaim the Beit HaMikdash, to reclaim the Jewish nature of the land of Israel. It's our country, it's our Beit HaMikdash, we will worship the way we see fit. On the other side of the same coin, there is an image of a lulav, with one hadas, one arava, and one etrog. Beautiful. But what's unusual about that? Well, one etrog makes sense. One lulav makes sense. But that's not our custom, is to have one hadas and one arava. It's a Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah. But there is an opinion that says it should be one, and one. And whose opinion is that? Rabbi Akiva. So why would the coin minted by Bar Kokhba have Rabbi Akiva's, the image or the ruling of Rabbi Akiva? Because who was Bar Kokhba's Rebbe? Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva was the one who also said that in a time of war, even Talmidei Chachamim should be going out and fighting. Okay. So it's possible that, in fact, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva did participate. Because if the coins led by the printed by that the person who led the rebellion highlight Rabbi Akiva's role in it, then I can believe that Rabbi Akiva told his Talmidim, boys, it's time to fight. We don't have a choice. That's the halacha. So they all went out to fight. So why is the Gemara not acknowledging that? The Gemara's point, however, is not to acknowledge that they fought. The Gemara's point is to acknowledge why they failed. Did they fight? Yes. So why were they not successful? Why was God not behind the rebellion? Why was God not supportive of the 24,000 Talmidim? And the answer to that, Rabbi Brander says, is because you can't have redemption if you cannot, in fact, create a society which is based on kavod. You can't have a redemption if you cannot create interpersonal relationships which give every person the due that they deserve. If that's the case, my friends, we may now have answer number two to a halacha that we read yesterday. The halacha is, who counts? Everyone counts. And do you know why everyone counts? Because one of the things we learned by the failure of Rabbi Akiva's students is you didn't give proper respect, you didn't give chashivas, you did not show that person the respect that he needed. And so how do we, as it were, what's our tikkun? What's our way of expressing? We understand the lesson, we learned the lesson. What's our way of showing that? Everybody counts. Rabbi Baruch Taub, the former rabbi of B'nai Tor, of the Beit, wrote an interesting article, I think I mentioned it yesterday, and at the end of it he says, everybody counts because everybody counts. Everybody counts, Sfira, because every person counts. And that's what the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva failed to understand. And so now we have a clearer picture. The mourning practices may have in fact started, possibly, according to Rav Natrunai, after the death of Rabbi Akiva and his 24,000 students. Most of the poskim, most of the written recorded literature shows only from about the 9th century, which means from the middle of the 2nd century, about 135 or so, till the 9th century, we have no record, written record, of any mourning practices. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just means we don't have a record. But be that as it may, starting with the tshuva of many of the Gaonim and clearly recorded in the Shulchan Aruch and is the custom today, in fact, we do maintain the mourning practices. But beneath the mourning practices is this lesson, which maybe if we all, not just here, but all Jews all over the world, understand this lesson, maybe we will be able to see the redemption that Bar Kokhba was fighting for. And what's that lesson? Everybody counts, because everybody counts. Rabbi Hananya ben Akashi Omer.